You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Barrett. Coming up, a new move in the U.S. Senate could halt the multi-billion dollar arms deal the Trump administration reached with Saudi Arabia. We'll learn what's at stake coming up. First, last week's Apple Developers Conference marked the beginning of the end of a digital era. The company announced it's going to end iTunes 18 years after the software debuted. Here's a listen to late Apple chairman Steve Jobs speaking in January of 2001, introducing iTunes, something he called a music revolution.
Really clean, really simple, far more powerful. It allows you to have libraries of music. It allows you to rip CDs. It allows you to create playlists. And it allows you to burn CDs all in one integrated application, all in one window. And let me show this to you now.
iTunes grew well beyond those original abilities, wrapping in the iTunes Store, video and podcast options, and compatibility with the iPod. All of that could make the program pretty frustrating to use, but it left a big impact on the way many of us buy and listen to music. Alyssa Breznak is a staff writer covering technology and culture for The Ringer. Alyssa, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I guess people in the know didn't see this as a big, huge surprise that iTunes is going away. Why is it, though, finally being phased out?
I think the basic answer is that it just got really bloated. It was a catch-all for so many different functions within the Apple ecosystem. And, you know, it was just cumbersome to open up. It would freeze computers. People would get lost in their music libraries. They would end up in the Apple Music Store. It just got really confusing. So that was kind of what motivated Apple, which always aims for simplicity, to move away from that model.
Yeah, it seems like it was simultaneously the most used and most hated software, the combination of the two together that you don't always see. There's a love-hate relationship with iTunes over the years.
Definitely. Like, we had to live with it, and it would pop up at times that were so inconvenient for users. I think over the past maybe like 5 years, every time I've plugged in my phone to like a car radio, iTunes has popped up and played the very first song on my library playlist, and it's so annoying.
Can I ask what song it is?
Oh, it's whatever starts with an A. I don't even remember. It's something completely thrown away, but it's because it's alphabetical. It's just a tick within the system. It's just one of the many quirks of iTunes.
I think everybody, whatever generation you're in, has nostalgic memories of whatever form of technology we listen to music on, whether it's the iPod or CDs or albums or, I don't know, wax cylinders. You were in a sweet spot for iTunes, right?
Yeah, so I was a teen right when iTunes came out in 2001, and I was on my family computers. I was on my family computer stealing music from Napster, essentially. And so I needed a place to put it, and iTunes was that place. And I was ripping, mixing, burning CDs, as the Apple advertisement goes, rip, mix, burn. So that was what I was doing. And if I wasn't getting my music from Napster, it would either be the CD store or from my parents' CD collection.
But there, one big development of iTunes is it gave a legal way to get music online without having to go to sometimes sketchy online sites.
Yeah, and that was in 2003. So that was a big gap between when it first came out, when the iPod came out, and then when the Apple Music Store was introduced. And so that was a time when, you know, eventually Napster was shut down because it was illegal, and other peer-to-peer file sharing networks popped up in its place. But if you're a teen with nothing to do in the middle of the day and you have all this access to free music on the internet, you're going to learn how to do it that way. And I think from then on, I didn't really quite understand the concept of paying for songs or CDs. That was very foreign to me.
Talking to Alyssa Breznak from The Ringer, talking about the end of iTunes. Apple says iTunes is going away. Alyssa, before you go any further, some people, I think, are a little panicked by this. People who have their entire music collections on iTunes, are people going to be able to keep their stuff?
Yes, there is no need to panic. I think that would cause a riot if Apple just decided that no one owned their media anymore. It's going to be splitting into three separate apps. One is music, the other is playlists, and then TV. And so all of your music is going to go to the music app, and all of your podcasts are going to go to the podcast app. And finally, all of your media, your TV shows will go on the TV app. It's going to be really seamless. And that'll happen in the fall when Apple releases its most recent Mac OS update.
What is Apple's strategy here in not just ending iTunes, but replacing it with three different threads, as you just mentioned?
They just want to clean things up, I think. And, you know, this is also just a shift away from a previous model. Initially, Steve Jobs really hammered in the idea that people should own their own media. It was media ownership. And hard drives got really big and crowded because of that. But at the same time, Apple's devices were getting smaller and smaller and thinner and thinner. So eventually those two things sort of, you know, went up against each other, and it became incompatible. So they had to move to this cloud-based system. That's where the industry was going. And that's why eventually it just made more sense to split these up in three, and everyone have their own libraries in the cloud in each one.
You wrote a piece about this, looking at the industry news, but also kind of your personal memories. We've talked some about that. Did you ever have a phase of having a lot of music on a physical medium, a CD or other format like that?
Yeah, but most of the memory I have is making the playlist on iTunes and then burning them onto CDs. So it was a way that I interacted with it, but it wasn't like a record or anything. I got to decide what was on the CD. It was very rarely just an album of an artist's work.
And do you feel like there's going to be a big generational divide for, you know, people who grew up the way you did in the early days of iTunes, and people who, you know, iTunes is already passé as they came into their musical lives?
Sure. I mean, I think I wrote in my piece that this is kind of like the 8-track for some people. You know, it was a necessary piece of technology that bridged two eras of listening. So obviously kids these days have no nostalgia or need for iTunes. They've probably been using streaming services most of their lives. But that doesn't mean that these things didn't have value for us. And, you know, in the same way, I remember, you know, my elders at the time would say, kids who download MP3s don't have any value for the music or the artists, or they don't appreciate, or they're not engaged. And I would say that actually iTunes and the like, sort of data entry that I had to do when I was using it actually kept me very engaged. So I'm sure there's going to be a version of that for a younger generation too. And I think that like by investing that kind of time, that's how you really engage with an artist and feel like, oh, okay, I'm their fan.
We heard from Keith on Facebook, who says, I buy my music usually on CD. If I really like it, I get it on record too. If I love it, I'll buy a download on Amazon. Keith says, artists put a lot of work in their craft. The least we can do is support them by buying their work. One complicated part of the story with iTunes, with streaming, and I assume with whatever replaces them, is how artists get compensated. Have we seen controversy with that on iTunes in particular?
I mean, definitely. iTunes kind of rocked the entertainment industry, the music industry, when it was first released in 2003. You know, before that, people were making a lot of money from CDs, and the idea that people could just buy a single song, like maybe the most popular song on an album, really threatened a huge source of income for artists. And we've only seen that kind of thing increase as streaming services have sort of gotten the rights to albums, and artists are given fractions of a cent for a listen instead of, you know, someone purchasing an actual song. So it's become a lot more ephemeral for the artists, and it's definitely true that they suffer for it.
We're talking to Alyssa Breznak, technology and culture writer for The Ringer, about the end of Apple's iTunes. The company says it's going away, going to be replaced by three different programs. Alyssa, has there been anything really that competes with iTunes? I know there was Windows Media Player, but I have a Windows computer and I used iTunes on Windows instead.
I think the competitors ended up coming up as streaming services ultimately. I mean, definitely not from the beginning. Yes, there was like Winamp and as you mentioned, the Windows Player. But for the most part, I would say the competitors were Pandora, Spotify, eventually Netflix, because the services started to really center around the content itself as opposed to being a platform. as we move to sort of a cloud streaming model as opposed to an ownership model.
Want to go to our callers now. Samantha is with us in Sturgeon Bay. Samantha, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, what's your story, Samantha?
Well, I have downloaded music onto my phone frequently, and every time I do where I get, I just have enough music that I love, something happens to the device or something crashes it and I lose all my music. So I just started buying CDs and I'm listening to those. I know it's very old school and I'm an older person, but honestly, at least I always know I have my music.
Samantha, thanks a lot for that call. Yeah, there's something about our psychological attachment to that physical CD versus something we feel like we might lose, even if we can reload and rebuild it, Alyssa.
Yeah, I think so. And it just goes back to the we want the kind of music we listened to when we were growing up. I think that's a formative time for us. I know so many people who love to listen to records when they were younger, and that's just going to be the main media that they're going to use for the rest of their life. I think that's really special about music, and I think everyone should do like their own way for sure.
Samantha, thanks for the call. But then there's me. I grew up with vinyl and cassettes, and I don't have a turntable. I do not have a cassette player. I don't see myself ever going back unless there's some kind of midlife crisis in the offing. A lot of people do seem to make this transition okay.
It's very modern of you, I would say. Yeah, I think it depends on whether or not you're into technology and you want to adapt. But I don't think that there's any sort of judgment call. I think it's what's convenient to you, just as long as you know the tools that are available.
Thanks a lot for that call, Samantha, at 800-642-1234. We'll go to Jason now in Monroe. Jason, hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
Oh, yeah, I'm an artist myself. I mean, and when I say artist, I mean like crossing different boundaries, drawing, painting, sculpting, and music. So as an artist, I feel with my whole heart that Apple kind of, in my opinion, destroyed this thing we call music. They kind of manipulate it into a virtual, intangible, but tangible kind of thing. And, it devastated everything from the way, like, an artist was getting paid. It devastated everything to the way we were consuming it. And, I've reverted back to collecting vinyl myself. I have a turntable. It's awesome. It's a really clear, you know, I think the artist's way of enjoying the music. And I think iTunes, and it's very, like, I would say, not so user-friendly ways of going about, like, if I had a file in, you know, my hard drive, if I moved it, Apple wouldn't know where it is now. You know, and I'm like, well, we're in the year 2000, whatever, and the software can't figure out where my music is now, and I moved it. Yeah, I physically moved it, but the fact that, like, the program can't figure out where that you know, file is, and I can just simply search it in my search bar, I felt that it was very, like, I don't know, like, it was a great idea, just not very well thought out to, you know, the whole idea of if you moved that piece of data.
Gotcha. So, like, Jason, thanks a lot for the call. We got a couple things there to work with. Alyssa, first of all, as a musician, he's not wild about it. I'm guessing Jason probably isn't the only musician in the world who feels like he does.
Yeah, I mean, it's just such an important, I think, issue for artists. They, you know, in the past couple of years, there's been major artists who have stood up for more indie artists. And Taylor Swift is one of them who said, hey, you know, you need to, like, Spotify, you need to treat indie artists better, and you can't take advantage of them like this. And so, yeah, I mean, it's really tough because it was a time of lawlessness in the initial internet. Everyone who was a teen was using Napster, and the moral argument didn't really work there. Once it's available, people are going to use it. And nowadays, because we have streaming and because iTunes sort of you know, showed us the way there, it's gotten worse and worse. And I really do think eventually it will come to a type of head with the music industry where artists are banding together to ask for more.
And Jason talked about some of the cumbersome nature of iTunes. If you did something tricky like move a music file to a different folder, it could really stymie iTunes. I think I've encountered that myself. Have you, Alyssa?
Yeah, I've lost so much music because iTunes is so disorganized. I mean, it's kind of amazing that, you know, Apple's whole thing is that this is supposed to be very user intuitive. They've always made a big deal about having great relationships with artists, and it's always been featured in their advertising and media so prominently. And yet, just like the simple experience of, okay, find me my music. Can you identify the MP3s on my hard drive? I guess not.
Thanks a lot for the call, Jason, at 800-642-1234. Talking to Alyssa Bresnak from The Ringer about the end of Apple's iTunes. They're phasing it out, replacing it with different programs, breaking it up into music and video and podcast platforms. Back to your calls now. We've got Mark with us in Madison. Mark, hi.
Hello. How are you doing? It's a good subject. I'm 57 years old. I've been playing music since I was a child, all kinds of instruments. Had some CD recordings under my belt in the studio, and I could not tell you how to download anything. I support my musicians that I listen to, all the music. I buy their CDs. I buy their T-shirts because that's what they want you to do from the very beginning, so that's what I do.
And is there something special about having the CD and the liner notes and all that stuff for you, Mark?
Absolutely, yes. You look at who was on there. Might have been a guest musician. What studio they recorded? Who actually did the engineering, the mixing, and all that? That's interesting stuff. And then the artwork too, you know. And that's just makes it interesting. You're sitting there with a beer and you're listening to the music and reading everything that's on the CD cover and the book that comes along with it.
Mark, thanks a lot for the call. Alyssa, I got to admit, I thought I was going to be like Mark at one stage in my life. And then, man, CDs and albums sure take up a lot of space. And I gradually eased over to being willing to buy the digital version without all the liner notes and things like that. But then for a lot of people after a certain generation, Alyssa, I guess, what's a liner note?
Yeah, it's funny that he said that, and that sounds very nostalgic, and I really appreciate his relationship with artists in that way. But I do think that there are new ways to engage with artists that sort of go beyond the liner note. It's like maybe you won't read that in the pamphlet of a CD or the inside of an album cover, but you'll see it on their Twitter, or it's part of a merchandise package you buy when you buy concerts for the ticket or tickets for a concert. So I think that what he's talking about has sort of been integrated into a larger social media platform that each artist has to keep maintained now. And the liner notes might not necessarily be in paper form, but we're getting that extra information from Twitter and from Instagram and from these artists' websites that they're running.
Thanks a lot for that call. Alyssa, one, I think, highlight, and you touched on this in iTunes, is the playlist. Before that, we could make mixtapes on cassettes for people, carefully curating and hitting the record button at just the right time. Do you still make playlists, mix lists for people?
I do, actually. And in fact, I really enjoy Spotify's social playlist maker, which means you can like add other people on and they can collaborate on a playlist. That's one really nice thing about these cloud-based streaming platforms is that they are far more social and you can see what your friends are listening to and send them songs. And I would say that the playlist is still really important to me. I think we associate music with moods and different emotions in our life. And when you have the right playlist, like say you're on the beach and you're looking at the sunset and you're cracking open a beer, you want to have a nice playlist for that. You might not want a whole album. And that's what's really great about this whole digital revolution in the first place. It's really made it so that we can customize this music to our lives.
So we got this big change in the works with iTunes now. Alyssa, what are you watching for? What are the frontiers of music consumption that you're watching to see where they're going to go?
Actually, I'm very interested in the social media network TikTok. It's an app. And it's where a lot of teens are spending their time nowadays. And it's also where they're discovering new artists. You may famously know Lil Nas X, who sang Old Town Road, and that's still number one on the Billboard charts. But that started with a viral Vine challenge. And I think that young people are engaging with music in the form of doing challenges. And that's their way. That's their bonding with the artist. You know, they have a memory of doing something, just like I had a memory of like metadata entry into my iTunes. So that's what I'm looking at.
We'll leave it there for now, Alyssa. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Alyssa Bresnak. She's a staff writer covering technology and culture for The Ringer. She was with us to talk about the legacy of iTunes after Apple announced it's phasing out the software. Still time for you to share your thoughts on the demise of iTunes later this year and tell us how you like to listen to music, whether digitally, streaming, or in some kind of physical medium, vinyl or CD or cassette. Let us know over on the Ideas Network Facebook page.